This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 13th of May, 2016. And a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The Hampshire Chronicle extracts we will be reading for you this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. First, two or three of our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And just a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And here's another reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick on the box, you may find it more convenient to access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording, which are listed in date order that you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent, first on the list. And on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Gerry Tough.
Hello.
And I am Maria Head, your presenter this week, and standing in for Ros Lydiard. And so, on to the news. The main headlines this week are: Conservatives hold council control after a nervy count, transplant joy as Zara has surgery, and massive plans for development go up for debate. So, Claire, can you give us the first headline story, please?
Conservatives hold council control after a nervy count. Winchester Conservatives have held on to the City Council, but the result was uncertain almost to the end of the count. The election was held on Ascension Day last Thursday, but it was the Liberal Democrats who were on the rise when the count finished at 5 p.m. on Saturday. The count was among the last nationally to finish at around 5 p.m, leaving the Tories on 25 councillors and the Liberal Democrats on 20. This was an all-out election caused by the boundary reorganisation that saw the number of seats cut from 57 to 45. Previously, the Tories had 33 seats, the Lib Dems 22 and Labour 2. It was only with the 6 seats of the last two wards, Bishops Waltham and Whiteley and Shedfield, that the Tory victory was assured. They will be happy that the dangers of an all-out election have been avoided, but the Lib Dems will be satisfied they have built a base from which to attack at the next elections in 2018. Labour lost their 2 seats, leaving them with no representation on the council for the first time since 2010. Council leader Stephen Godfrey, speaking to the Chronicle moments after a celebratory photo on the steps of the Guildhall, said he had thought the result might have been closer after early returns on Friday. He said, "People are recognising we are focusing on things that are important to residents, the local issues like parking at a reasonable price, and trying to do what we can to keep areas tidy. We are making sure we are responding to problems in the local community." The Lib Dems will be disappointed to have got so close, at one stage in the afternoon, thinking they might even snatch control. But they will be satisfied to have cut the majority from 9 to 5. The next election is in 2 years' time because of elections to Hampshire County Council. Lib Dem leader Lucille Thompson said, "It's been a good day for us with an excellent set of results. We have gained ground and improved on last year, when 3 seats were lost. We have shown we are not dead and buried, but that we are back." Councillor Thompson said, "It was sad to have lost Margaret Power in Alresford. She has been superb for Alresford. To get 1,400 votes was an astonishing amount, and then to lose is very frustrating." Labour candidate and former group leader Patrick Davies was disappointed to see the last two councillors go. "We always knew the boundary changes would make life difficult for us," he said, referring to the disappearance of the St John and All Saints ward covering Highcliffe and Winnall. "It is going to be difficult to get back, but one never says never. It's a tragedy that Janet Berry has lost. Winchester is poorer for the fact there is no principled opposition. Important decisions this summer will not be properly scrutinised." The challenge of the Winchester Independents petered out, with the best performer being Kezia Hoffman, who polled 661 votes, to finish 7 out of 10 candidates in St Barnabas ward. It showed that although there is dissatisfaction over the handling of schemes such as Silver Hill, most electors stick to the established political parties. In a statement, the Independents said, "In the city wards, we now have 9 Liberal Democrat and 5 Conservative councillors, so it is likely that as before the election, Winchester will once again be governed by a Conservative cabinet made up of councillors who live outside the city. This is not the end, just the end of the beginning. We have learned a lot, gathered much goodwill, and will go forward with even more determination that there is a place for independence on Winchester City Council. The Green Party took comfort from securing 17% of the vote in St Bartholomew ward, which covers the Hyde area."
My story is called "Transplant Joy as Zara Has Surgery," and this is a story we've been following in recent weeks. It was the day her family and friends had been praying for. Winchester schoolgirl Zara Al-Sheikh has had a successful bone marrow transplant that it is hoped will cure her leukemia. She underwent the operation at University College London Hospital after a match was finally found last month. The 13-year-old was the focus of a social media campaign called Match for Zara, which attracted help and support from all across the globe. It was set up to find the King's School pupil a donor, as well as to get more people on the stem cell register. The Hampshire Chronicle-backed campaign included a donor drive held by her friends and family in Winchester. This saw more than 900 people, or 2 every minute, register at St Peter's Church in Jury Street. Her school had also held fundraising events for Delete Blood Cancer UK, who helped Zara find a match and presented them with a cheque for £500. On Facebook, the Match for Zara page, run by her parents, Karenza and Lua, said she was sitting up and smiling after a successful operation. Her family also took the chance to thank everyone who spread the message about the search. The post said, "Best news ever. Zara has had a successful transplant and is sitting up and smiling. Thank you to each and every one of you for your love, support, prayers, wishes and hope." They added, "A special thank you to the wonderful, kind and generous donor, without whom this couldn't have been possible. Whoever you are, words cannot say what you mean to us. The relief that this day has come is overwhelming. It's been a long, hard road for the teenager. At the age of 11, Zara was diagnosed with myelodysplastic syndrome, which then transitioned into leukemia. She'd found it tougher than most to find a match, as her mother is English and her father is Iraqi. This means she has a more diverse tissue type, with just 4% chance of finding a suitable donor.
Massive plans for development go up for debate. These are the visions for a major scheme for Winchester. Two firms of architects have shown proposals for station approach. The multi-million pound development would see massive changes from Newburgh Street, Stockbridge Road and Andover Road to Cattle Market Car Park. The schemes by Winchester-based Design Engine and London-based Hopkins Architects were due to be considered by Cabinet on May the 19th. However, a decision has been delayed to allow more time for consideration. The option will be chosen by an expert jury and officer panel, taking into account public views. Scheme B centres on exploiting merits of local heritage and will have mixed use, including commercial, residential, parking and shops. It will have a four-storey office building with 80,000 square foot of space. The Carfax site will have 92 flats, retail units, a new station square, a new Northgate yard and flexible office accommodation. Meanwhile, the Cattle Market site will have office space, 118 flats, retail units, a retained view from Andover Road to Winchester Cathedral and underground parking. Plan C will have homes to the south and west corner of the Carfax site, which they say responds to the residential character of Gladstone Street. The development would be predominantly two-bed duplex housing and two flat beds, with a series of interlocking courts. The City Council Head of Estates, Kevin Warren, compared the schemes. He said, "Both have surprised us with the amount of work they've put in. In both cases, they've probably put £100,000 each towards their plans already." Councillor Ian Tate said, "I like the appearance of Design B, but we have to get the balance right of it looking attractive and delivering the amount of space we require." Ward Councillor Martin Todd said, "It's Silver Hill all over again. The Conservatives seem determined to repeat the mistakes they made before, with buildings that are too big for the site and, as a direct result, are totally wrong for Winchester."
Thank you, everyone. We'll read you the death notices now, which will be followed by Christian comment from Claire. And the death announcements begin with Bruce. David Gordon Bruce died suddenly on the 1st of May, aged 51.
Earwaker, George Earwaker, died peacefully on 4th of May, aged 93.
Emblem, Lorna MacDonald Emblem, on the 28th of April.
Hall, George Hall, suddenly but peacefully, on 2nd of May, aged 82.
Hanton, Nancy Priscilla Hanton, peacefully on the 9th of May, aged 90.
Jenkins, Rose Linda Jenkins, passed away on 25th April, aged 86.
Lovelock, Alfred James, known as Jim Lovelock, on the 29th of April, aged 86. Oh.
Yes, there's a peculiarity.
Sorry,
there.
I hadn't read that in it, but... Sorry, let me read that again. Lovelock, Alfred James, known as Jim, on the 29th of April, aged 86.
Morehouse, June Morehouse, peacefully on 3rd of May, aged 85.
Nelms, Ronald Nelms, died in his sleep on the 4th of May, aged 89.
Powell, Georgina, Gina Powell, at home 3rd of May after a short illness.
Shaw, Nellie Shaw, peacefully on the 5th of May, aged 104.
Snell, Dorothy Alice Snell, peacefully in her sleep on the 6th of May, aged 102.
And Christian comment is contributed this week by the Reverend Paul Kennedy. Please, Claire.
He's the rector of East Winchester and has entitled this slow down and take a deep breath. This Sunday, Pentecost, we celebrate the Holy Spirit. We remember the early church sharing the experience of Jesus in a bustling Jerusalem, enabled by the Spirit to engage in different languages. There was noise and excitement, but we need to recognise that God is often experienced in quiet and calm. The biblical word used for spirit is either the Hebrew ruach or the Greek pneuma, meaning both spirit and breath. So the Bible starts with creation, where the spirit or breath of God hovers over the deep. This linking of spirit and breath offers a mystical understanding of God, moving beyond the surface meaning of words and plunging the depths of our being. The biblical Moses was a shepherd for years before he turned aside to stare at a burning bush. There he was told to remove his sandals because he was standing on holy ground. Was that ground suddenly holy? We don't know, but for a long time Moses could have been distracted by the cares of the flock, concerns for his family, and memories of his people in a distant land, without recognizing God doing a new thing in his presence. God gives Moses a task to lead his people to freedom. Moses needs to know God's name to rally the people. The name he is given is YHWH, often translated as I am who I am, and pronounced as Yod-Hi-Vav-Hi, which is the sound of breathing. God's name isn't spoken but breathed, from the first breath of the newborn to the final breath of death. In the creation narrative, Adamah, dust, forms the first person who's only alive once God has breathed into his, Adam's, nostrils. Later, the crucifixion recalls the fragility of earthly life when Jesus breathes his last. Prayers from different faith traditions focus upon breath. After all, there is no Muslim, Buddhist, or Christian way of breathing. It is the experience of life. However, Christianity offers some insights into the role of the Spirit, which could inspire breathing prayers. Firstly, the Spirit sanctifies. It overcomes that which keeps us from going deeper with God and one another. Maybe frustrations over money or broadband connections. As you relax into God's presence, become conscious of your breathing. Acknowledge before God your frustrations and distractions. Breathe out these frustrations. Secondly, as Jesus tells us, the Spirit leads us into all truth. Ask God to increase your understanding and inspire you. Just spend time alongside God, bound by the breath of life. Lastly, we're told that the Spirit dwells with us. What do you need to breathe in of the Spirit? In what areas do you need strengthening? It's helpful to hold other people in your breathing prayers, giving you empathy and inspiring you to help. Yod-Hi-Vav-Hi, every breath can be God's name. We can be mindful of our breath, slowing down, taking deep breaths from our stomach. Or we can rush past the burning bush in a breathless haste. And that was written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy, Rector of East Winchester.
And now time for letters to the editor. The Chronicle has recently begun to include more letters in its columns, which of course gives us a greater number to read to you. This week we have 11 letters for you on wide-ranging subjects. Richard will start us off with the first letter.
It is entitled Perplexing PCs and comes from Daphne E. Smith. So I have drawers full of instruction books, leaflets, diagrams, etc., containing information on how to use all the electrical items which most of us own today. However, computer manufacturers do not offer such help to a new buyer. How to install the thing is well covered, but like many others, I leave that to someone with experience. I started writing in the dim and distant early 1930s, using a slate and chalk, followed by wooden pen holders with scratchy nibs to dip in the inkwells fitted on school desks, and then a birthday gift of a fountain pen. I learned to type on large, heavy typewriter, followed as the years passed by on a neat portable, an electric one, and a word processor. Then I had a second-hand computer from my brother, who was updating in 2000. I'm very fortunate to have a niece and her husband, both experts, and they were responsible for introducing me to the world of technology. There was quite a bit of trial and many errors until I mastered my new toy. I always enjoyed writing, but never sent anything away for publication until I was in my late 50s. I was a regular contributor to the letter pages in the Hampshire Chronicle for several years, which was very enjoyable, for I had feedback from people who wrote to me privately and met some of them. The local TV companies read your published letters too. I stopped writing when my late husband became ill and have only recently started again after an 8-year break. My first effort at the Chronicle, of course. I've just replaced my third computer, and everything is so different each time this happens that I have to rely on niece and husband to start me off again. When I asked a librarian for an idiot's guide back in 2000, he said there wasn't one. Find a 5-year-old, they knew it all. A bit of an exaggeration, but I think they do now. I still think a new computer should have come with a manual. Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton, Alsford.
This letter says, not accessible, and it comes from Paul Davies. How the King's Head at Hursley could ever win any award defeats me, with its facilities for disabled people non-existent. We booked a table via the internet to be told, after getting into the building with a wheelchair, despite no entrance other than ones with steps, that we didn't have a table because the restaurant was full, even though I showed the staff details of confirmation booking, who dismissed it, saying the system was useless. We then proceeded to the Dolphin in Hursley, were greeted with a cheery, positive attitude, and had a lovely meal there despite a full restaurant and eating in the bar. Thoroughly recommend this pub restaurant any time. As a final word on the King's Head, it would at least try to ensure disabled drivers have a designated space. What there is barely visible and used by all. Paul Davies, Lakeside Road, Rownhams, Southampton.
This letter is from Jackie Porter, headed Tory Hypocrisy. In answer to your correspondent's rather vitriolic comments about me in your paper last week, I'd like to explain, because the facts are simple. The rubbish proposal to cut hours, days, and even whole recycling centres completely has been made by the Conservatives at Hampshire County Council. Liberal Democrats opposed the cuts. That's why we organised the protest and banners. Working together? Yes, I'm very happy to do so, and we are. But I also want the public to be in no doubt. These cuts are a Conservative proposal. So the message to save our tip from local Tories is just plain hypocritical. And if you haven't already done so, please don't forget to respond to the consultation at www.hants.gov.uk/HWRC2016 by May 25th. Jackie Porter, City and County Councillor, Main Road, Itchen Abbas.
Chris Hansford urges expand car park. I write to ensure that city councillors and their officers are aware of an imminent opportunity that was previously lost when the new car park was built on the east side of the railway station. I was involved with the car park building 2 years ago when South West Trains engaged Goldbeck to build single-deck car parking in Winchester, providing 120 spaces. Goldbeck offered South West Trains the opportunity to future-proof their car park for £25,000. The car park is a modular building system, and future-proofing would enable another deck to be built, subject to planning, in the future by enlarging the foundations and columns to enable this to be done. It should come as no surprise that SWT declined this offer, as they are a leaseholder and their lease is due for review very soon. There is due to be built another car park on the west side of the station, again by Goldbeck. I would encourage councillors or officers to pursue this opportunity, as for £25,000, previously it would have been possible to ensure that Winchester had the potential of another 120 car park spaces on the existing deck. Chris Hansford, Clifton Road, Winchester.
A letter entitled Vote Narcissism, comes from Peter Rees, who is a former Labour councillor. The St Michael Ward election result was completely skewed through the narcissistic and mischievous intervention of independent candidate Judith Martin. Representing a loose group of people with too much time on their hands and not enough money, their platform of independence, supported by a mantra of honesty in local politics, rings hollow. Judith Martin resigned from the Labour Party shortly before the elections, with careful and calculated espionage during manifesto discussions. Her independence was based on the highly successful Winchester Labour Party policies. So much for the ragtag and bobtail ramblings of those who tried to convince a few voters that independence was the best thing since sliced bread. Successful Labour Party policies work everywhere, and they are not dressed up to be independent, just honest, transparent, putting social justice first. A brazen attempt at deception failed miserably. Thank you, former Labour councillors Janet Berry and Clive Gosling, for your community devotion and outstanding records. The main outcome of the elections is more years of Tory misrule. We are faced with increasing opportunities to asset strip, privatise, and collaboration in clandestine dodgy deals under the guise of commercial confidentiality. Highly secret leisure centre negotiations are already being conducted. The council are comfortably snuggled up in bed with Tesco, this to ensure that Tesco get the best deal to sell their land for more unaffordable housing. There is no overall plan, including Bar End, and the Tory council is obstructing the implementation of a completely overarching project management group. No change there from the Tories. Profit first, people last. The Tories continue to encourage the development of more unregulated HMOs. They've completely mishandled the growth of HMOs in Stanmore, and to quote Councillor Horrell, the horse has bolted. As a consequence, HMOs in Stanmore and elsewhere will proliferate. If it's council or public property, it will be sold or privatised. A bleak future ahead under this administration. Peter Rees, former Labour councillor and group leader, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Bias laid bare is the letter from Tony Pryor. There is an event advertised as a debate between two authors this Sunday in the Discovery Centre. It is one of the series in the programme for the Winchester Speakers Festival. On the one hand, there is the formidable Dan Hannan, MEP, one of the foremost voices in the Brexit campaign. On the other is Dennis McShane, advertised as one of the most pro-EU politicians of his generation. We have learnt that they're now going to be joined on the discussion panel by another prominent voice for the Brexit campaign, Jacob Rees-Mogg, MP, one of those famously opposed to John Major when he was PM and a journalist, James Forsyth, political editor of The Spectator, and a regular columnist and cheerleader for Boris Johnson in his weekly column in The Sun. It requires some stretch of the imagination to describe this as a fair and balanced debate. If your readers are willing to pay the ticket price of £10 on Sunday, then perhaps they would also be interested to come along on Thursday, May the 19th at 6 p.m. to the Guildhall to hear The Conservative Case for Europe, a free event organised by the European Movement. It is one in a series enabling each political party to present its case for Britain to remain in the EU. And the speakers will include Neil Carmichael, MP, of the Conservative Europe Group, and Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council. In our case, we make the bias of the meeting clear, so that those who come know in advance to what they are coming. Tony Pryor, CBE, Chairman, European Movement, Hampshire, Worthy Road, Winchester.
Blot on Skyline, says Michael Fielding. Richard Baker, Chronicle, March the 17th, had 13 interesting observations about Winchester today. Love it or loathe it, there was no mention of the former police headquarters in the Romsey Road. At this stage, it continued to dominate the landscape. From its upper floors, I imagine that the views are spectacular. My suggestion to the new Chief Constable is that she allows residents access before the building is demolished, with a collection taken for the Police Federal Welfare Fund. When the day of demolition comes, please, may I push the plunger? Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Alternatives to releasing balloons comes from William Vine. It was disappointing to read about the balloon release at Winall Primary School in the Chronicle, April the 28th. While wishing the school well with their achievements, it is well known by now the harm that balloon releases can do to wildlife. The RSPB and the Marine Conservation Society are two of the better-known sources of information on the subject. At best, it is scattering litter. At worst, birds, livestock, and marine life can eat or get tangled in the debris, causing suffering and loss of life. It is also a waste of scarce helium, which has important applications in research into medicine and physics. Organisations wishing to commemorate an event could achieve a more lasting result by planting trees or a wildlife hedge, where they can learn about the birds, insects, and other wildlife that can benefit. William Vine, Chairman, Winchester Science Festival, Southgate Street, Winchester.
This letter is headed Festival Success. Winchester has just hosted its 9th Chamber Music Festival, and all concerned should feel very pleased with themselves. The programme ranged from the works of Haydn, 1732 to 1809, to George Benjamin, 1960, on. So there was a feast for all tastes. The atmosphere was refreshingly relaxed and the musicianship uniformly stunning. Having criticised the shortcomings of the air conditioning system in the Discovery Centre auditorium last year, credit must also be given where it's due, as the remedial work has improved matters considerably. Here's to another successful festival next year. Brian and Heather Oswald, Castle Farm Lane, Wickham.
Post Office Pain. On Friday, April the 29th, I stood in the queue for 15 to 20 minutes just to get a stamp and post a small card abroad. Why can't they have separate machines even if you just want stamps? I go to Bogden Regis on a regular basis. The post office there has a do-it-yourself machine, just for what I've mentioned above. It would save a lot of time and reduce the main queue quicker. There's never enough staff to deal with the amount of people that go. Can somebody tell me why we cannot have these machines? There was a lot of angry people waiting that day. I, Mitchell, Minden Way, Stanmore, Winchester.
This letter comes from Melinda Ashfield. I am writing on behalf of Winchester Housing Trust in reference to your article on the bottom right hand of page 2, titled Drugs Arrest, in the Chronicle on April the 28th. Your article states that the offence took place at an address in Colson Road, which is factually incorrect. The incident was in Colson Close, which are the properties of Winchester City Council and not Winchester Housing Trust, which can be very misleading. Melinda Ashfield, Housing Manager, Winchester Housing Trust.
Oh, and thanks everyone for those. This week, the Chronicle's roving reporter asked people of Winchester their opinions about the new designs for Station Approach. Paul Williams, 57, of Worthy Lane, Winchester, said, I think it's quite hard to tell what the effect of Station Approach will be. It would be helpful to look at a CGI. Residents are concerned about the bulk and mass of building. Mike Elk, 64, retired, of Aylesford Road, Winchester, said, it would help a lot if there was a 3D image. I'm looking forward to seeing more details about the plans. It is an exciting start. Paul Mackey, 43, lecturer, of Worthy Lane, said, what strikes me overall is it seems too intense in terms of trying to fit too much in. It almost strikes me as the first plans for Silver Hill. Mike Caldwell, 54, photographer from Hyde, said, my initial reaction is the scaling is completely inappropriate. I think it will shock quite a few residents. Dare I say it? Might suggest it is a Silver Hill too? If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, or you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO 23 8AL. And next we have editorial comment, followed by first person and letter from Westminster. Can we start with you, please, Claire?
Certainly. The editorial comment headed, Why the Wiping Out of Labour Matters. The Hampshire Chronicle has been and always will be politically neutral. However, it is a sad day that the last two Labour members lost their seats on the City Council at the polls last week. Janet Berry and Clive Gosling were victims of the reorganisation of boundaries, with the reduction in size of the authority from 57 to 45 members. That revamp saw the disappearance of their St John and All Saints ward that covered Highcliffe and Winnall. The wiping out of Labour does matter. There are now only two groups on the council and thus less opportunity for the vital scrutiny of policy and decisions. The lack of adequate scrutiny was a key finding of the Claire Lloyd-Jones report into the causes of the Silver Hill debacle. Most city councillors, whether Tory or Lib Dem, will disagree with this view, but they are motivated by their own vested interests rather than the wider benefit. The perhaps permanent eclipse of Labour also makes it less likely that the discredited cabinet system itself will be replaced by the transparent committee system. The emergence of the Winchester Independents has, along with the Greens, split the anti-Tory vote. It is an irony that the emergence of the Independents, with the laudable intention of giving another voice on the City Council, has actually helped to reduce the number of voices.
And first person comes from George Hayter, who asks, what's up, docs? These days we can all see what Winchester's NHS hospital looks like. The splendid front of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, opposite the prison in Romsey Road, used to be hidden behind untidy huts and temporary buildings. But since the architectural clutter was cleared from the forecourt a few years ago, the glorious Victorian Gothic facade of the much-loved hospital has been plain to see. But plain to see is the last thing I can say about the bitter dispute going on inside and inside every other NHS hospital in England. I have no diagnosis for the junior doctor's long, dragging industrial dispute with the government, let alone a cure. I've never known a patient with so many complaints as the doctor's, with no remission in sight as I type this. Only the Brexit debate seems more baffling than the complex disagreement between the BMA Union and the Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt. Conservative Mr. Hunt wants to impose a new contract on all but the most senior hospital doctors, in order to honour his party's election promise to bring hospital care at weekends up to the high standard enjoyed in the week. He argues that the Tory general election victory gives him a mandate to reduce doctors' weekend pay so that the seven-day-a-week promise can be afforded. And he says doctors won't even lose pay overall because their basic rate will go up. Doctors are already one of the highest paid employment groups. They enjoy stratospheric status and enviable job security. Other job groups have suffered pay cuts and redundancies since 2008, when the credit crunch made us a poorer country. The government was elected on a promise to reduce the national debt by saving money, so there's not much spare cash for the docs or anyone else. On the other hand, doctors' pay rises have been lower than inflation in recent years. Although a quarter of BMA members did not take part in the strike vote, those that did voted 99% in favour. The union says it wants a deal that does not disadvantage part-timers, and it wants weekend arrangements that do not wreck family life for doctors. The doctors say they're fed up of hearing government ministers undervaluing their work and undermining patients' trust in them. Near the top of the doctors' ragbag pile of complaints is that the new employment contract removes limits on the hours they can be forced to work, potentially leading to tired staff and unsafe treatment. Making life or death decisions while short of sleep is certainly not to be envied. Horrible stress, I would say. But less audible than the worthy safety concerns voiced by the doctors is their slightly less virtuous pay claim. The docs say the Hunt plan doesn't give them enough cash for working on Saturdays. I don't know if I'm cynical, but I can't help feeling that this BMA crusade over patient care would be more convincing if it wasn't coupled with a crusade to enlarge its members' pay packets. I can't recall a strike campaign solely about NHS patient care before, but if this was turned into one, I'd definitely be on the docs' side. I like doctors. I admire their brains and I rely on their skills. When I was young, I knew medical students and I was impressed by how much alcohol they could drink. I still know one or two now, and although they've complained to me about their jobs, my sympathy has been tempered by envy of their wallets. The BMA is saying doctors are fed up with the government riding roughshod over their safety concerns. Trouble is that the docs, like most of us, have a manager, and their manager is the government. I know doctors are thoroughly professional, but I still wouldn't like to be Jeremy Hunt if he becomes a patient. And I'd be nervous if this essay got into my medical notes.
Letter from Westminster this week is written by George Hollingbury, MP Meon Valley. And it might be as controversial as the previous item about the doctors. Hmm. There was much celebration last month when the Queen reached her 90th birthday, and I would very much like to add my best wishes. Her Majesty is a superb head of state. Her dedication to duty and sheer hard work over six decades has won respect across the world. But I believe there could be serious problems ahead. Quite a few people, royal commentators and constitutional experts, believe she will die with the monarchy safe, both here and in the UK and in the Commonwealth. but I would like to add a note of caution to that assessment, because I fear they have yet to fully address what will happen on her passing, which I hope is many years away. I think that most people, both here and particularly in Commonwealth countries like Australia and New Zealand, are perfectly happy to have the Queen as head of state for the very good reasons I've already mentioned. They are not monarchists, they are Elizabethists, out of sheer respect for her and her alone. And there the danger lies. The Queen has been our head of state for so long, everyone just accepts her role and, crucially, how she so successfully chooses to do it, quietly, without fuss or controversy. Her death will put the monarchy's position and its future very sharply into perspective. In Australia, and perhaps even New Zealand, there has to be a big question mark over whether Prince Charles will remain as king in those countries. Another question is, will King Charles III be head of the Commonwealth? And what of here? Well, to think the passing of the Queen will immediately lead to calls for a republic is far-fetched, but it will be a time of danger for the monarchy, and everyone in government will need to be very aware of it if a constitutional crisis is to be avoided. Prince Charles may well want to be a very different head of state, more interventionist, perhaps, and that may not be palatable. Of course, it's only right he wants to be his own man, but if that's too far from the unassuming head of state model we've been accustomed to this last six or seven decades, then there could be some uncomfortable times, giving rise to challenging constitutional questions. The old cliché, a hard act to follow, cannot have a more pertinent context than when Charles, or anyone else for that matter, accedes to the throne. My personal view is that it will have to evolve yet again, and quickly, if it's to survive. George Hollingbury, MP for Meon Valley.
And now it's time for Belgarum's alternative take on the news. And it looks like we're starting with you again, Claire.
Get me. this article is called Car Takes the High Road. You see all sorts of strange and wonderful things in and around Winchester, and this week was no different, with tartan bodywork on a car raising eyebrows. The Scottish-themed vehicle, looking to Belgarum's eyes like a giant shortbread tin, was parked at Sainsbury's Badger Farm. Winchester's resident Barbara Colson saw the tartan car and quickly took a picture of it. She said, "I thought the wheel trims pushed it over the top. I often take random photos of things that make me smile to share with others. Cars have been a theme for years. Doors and windows are another, and particularly door knockers and drain pipes." The picture was posted on Winchester's Pictures on Facebook, and people made a few cheeky observations. One person said, "It just needs a few studs on the bonnet and a giant safety pin." The owner of the car, which appears to be a Ford Focus, did not just limit the paintwork to the body of the vehicle, the wheels were also given the tartan treatment. One person said on Facebook, "It belongs to a Bay City Rollers tribute band, perhaps." Whoever the car belongs to, they've certainly turned the heads of Winchester residents and left a mark wherever they park.
Elections miscellany. If revenge is a dish best served cold, then Kelsey Learney enjoyed a big salad. She defeated Paul Twelvetree in St Barnabas 12 months after he humbled her in the then Littleton and Hairstock ward. Miss Learney was defeated by 213 votes in 2015, but reversed the results in the new St Barnabas ward, polling 1,406 to Mr Twelvetree's 1,317. Also back is Lib Dem Eleanor Bell, who after several years off the council, topped the poll in Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery. Meanwhile, for connoisseurs of a slow election count, Winchester's was a classic. The validation of the votes on Thursday should have made Saturday's count a stroll. But it took 7 hours for all the results to be declared, with the last one coming at around 5 p.m. It was Howard Bone's first time as returning officer. Things went smoothly, but at one point he chided the hall after a tumbler of water fell from the balcony onto a counting table. No one was hurt.
A marathon effort. A grandfather, who is blind and wheelchair-bound, is celebrating completing the London Marathon. Martin Jacobs finished the race in 6 hours 21 minutes and is on course to raise thousands of pounds for charity. The 71-year-old of North Hill Close Fallflood has faced a string of illnesses over the past decade, but powered his way around the course with the assistance of his guides, fitness instructor Lydia Lockhart, and Naomi House and Jack's Place marketing manager Keith Wilson. Mr. Jacobs, former landlord of the County Arms in Romsey Road, says he hopes to take on more challenging events in the future. He raised money for Click Sergeant, Trinity Winchester, the Alzheimer's Society, and Naomi House and Jack's Place. Mr. Jacobs said, "This was one of the most challenging events I've ever completed, but the roar of the crowd and the fabulous support of the charities lining the course gave me a real boost. I couldn't have completed the marathon without my fabulous guides, Keith and Lydia, so I must thank them for their efforts."
And now news from 200 years ago. May the 13th, 1816, and there are two items. The first is titled A Likely Story. At the Battle of Waterloo, a major of the 42nd Highlanders, preferring to fight on foot in front of his men, had given his horse to hold to a little drummer boy of the regiment. After some hard fighting with the French, he fell from loss of blood near a brave private, Donald McIntosh of his corps, who was mortally wounded at the same instance. The little drummer had left the horse to assist poor Donald. A lancer, seeing the horse, thought him a fair prize and made a dash at him. The dying Highlander groaned out, and I do apologise for my Scottish accent, "Hoot, mon, ye mun attack that beast, to belongs to our captain here." Levelled his musket, shot him dead, and the next moment expired himself. And the second item, new coins launch. A new coinage is proceeding at the mint, which is said to include both gold and silver. The gold pieces are of 20 shillings, which is certainly a great convenience to trade. The silver includes what has long been wanted, a shilling of a new die. Both these coins are said to be remarkably neat in execution.
100 years ago, May the 13th, 1916. Bad news from Kut. General Sir John Nixon's dispatch on the Mesopotamian operations was published on Thursday. It covers the Battle of Ctesiphon, the retreat on Kut, the first attempts of the Turks to carry our positions there by storm, and the early stages of the relief column's advance. The dispatch adds little to our knowledge of events. It pays tribute to the splendid spirit of the troops and has a special word for the gallantry of the Indians. The sixth and last batch of sick and wounded from Kut reached the headquarters of the Tigris Corps on the evening of March the 8th. The total number thus brought from Kut is 1,136. And the second item says Germans attack. The furious German bombardment of the French positions on the slopes of Hill 304 in the Avecourt region of the Verdun defences continued during the weekend. Heavy shell and gas were used by the enemy with some success, for at one point he made the French trenches untenable and managed to get his assaulting columns through the curtain fire of the French guns. They were driven back, however, at the point of the bayonet, and these shattered trenches remain untenable by either side. The Germans have made a number of raids along the British and French fronts, and to the south of the Somme, launched an attack near Lyon.
And two items from 50 years ago, May the 14th, 1966. Water decision. For an experimental period of a year, the Winchester City water supply is to be treated with ammonia to combat the excess chlorine and improve the taste. This decision, following complaints from consumers, was taken at a meeting of the City Council on Tuesday by 19 votes to 1, with Councillor Mrs. Neat the solitary opponent. People can do what they like with food, she said. There's a choice available, but with water, everybody has to take it, and there is no choice whatsoever. That's why it needs special care. The chairman of the Water Committee, Alderman E.C. Neat, explained that the chlorine ammonia treatment of the water was different to fluoridation. The former was purification, the latter a medication. And the second item is the theatre launch. Last week saw an outstanding event in the life of the Winchester Dramatic Society, the presentation of two plays in their own little theatre. The ancient church of St. Peter Chesil, which the Society is still in the process of converting into the Chesil Little Theatre, was used for the first time for a dramatic production. The second act from The Chalk Garden by Enid Bagnold, and a one-act play by John Mortimer entitled Collect Your Baggage, were presented informally for members of the Society and their invited guests.
25 years ago, May the 10th, 1991. Builders collapse. Receivers dealing with the collapse of one of Winchester's oldest building firms revealed this week that Mason and Company had debts approaching £1 million. Mason and Company of Winnell Valley Road, which was undertaking the restoration work on Winchester Cathedral's tower, called in the receivers after failing to find a financial backer. The closure has resulted in the loss of 34 jobs and comes only a month after Morton and Sons, another long-established Winchester building firm, went into receivership. The company's subsidiary, Hampshire Scaffolding, were responsible for work at the cathedral. And the second section is headed French offer. If you see more than the usual number of French cars heading for Bishop's Waltham tomorrow, Saturday, the attraction is the ability to park for nothing in the shopping centre. To celebrate the final day of their French week, the town's Chamber of Trade is staging a concours d'élégance by offering to refund parking fees for all customers owning French cars. The Trader's Choice of May the 4th to the 11th for their French week, with window and shop displays emphasising the Gallic touch, coincided with two separate visits by French twins. There was a party from Waltham's twin town of Saint-Bonnet and a group of Rotarians from Nantes.
Thank you, everyone. That finishes our regular features for this week. So let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks or so. On Tuesday the 24th of May, the Winchester Talking Newspaper will be holding its AGM in Littleton Village Hall at 2 p.m. There will be an organ recital in the cathedral on the 30th of May at 4 p.m. And on Saturday the 4th of June, the Abbey Gardens in Winchester will be holding a grand picnic and lots of activities to celebrate Her Majesty the Queen's 90th birthday. You can contact the Winchester Tourist Office for details on 01962 840 500. That's 01962 840 500. And before we move on to the general news, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 14th of May, the sun will set at 8:48 p.m. And on Wednesday the 18th of May, the sun will rise at 5:11 a.m. and with lighting up time at 8:54 p.m. And so on to items of general news, with Jerry starting us off, please.
Bid launched to overturn verdict. The man jailed for life for the murder of Branbridge pensioner Georgina Edmonds has launched a bid to overturn his conviction. Matthew Hamlin has applied for leave to appeal against the verdict 2 months after he was found guilty. He was convicted at Winchester Crown Court following a relaxation of the double jeopardy rule that prevented someone being tried for the same crime twice. 4 years ago, Hamlin was cleared of killing Mrs. Edmonds, 77, at her Riverside cottage in 2008. But the electrician was dramatically rearrested in 2014 and charged with her murder for the second time. Jurors at the new trial were told that police had found new DNA evidence linking him to the crime. A sample obtained from the victim's blouse was 26 million times more likely to have come from Hamlin than someone else, the court heard. The married father of one was found guilty of murdering Mrs. Edmonds, who was stabbed 37 times before being bludgeoned to death with a rolling pin. A courts and tribunals judiciary said, Matthew Hamlin has lodged an application for permission to appeal against his conviction. The next step will be for a judge to decide whether to grant permission. Hamlin's family have also launched a campaign to clear his name. They've created a website, Matthew Hamlin is Innocent, which questions some of the evidence, citing the ease with which the murderer gained entry to the victim's home and the fact that she apparently made no attempt to activate her alarm bracelet. They knew she was killed by someone she knew. Hamlin, 37, of Basingstoke, was unanimously cleared by the original jury in 2012 and denied murder when he stood trial again. Jurors at Winchester Crown Court were shown CCTV footage of an unidentifiable man, said by the prosecution to be Hamlin, trying to obtain cash using the victim's debit card. But William Mousley, QC, defending, said the evidence that his client was ATM man was pretty shaky. One of Hamlin's former colleagues, David Moore of Carlton Electrical Services, was shown the footage and told the court it wasn't Matthew. Hamlin's family have also studied the images. They say his shoes are several times bigger than those worn by the man who was subsequently convicted of Mrs. Edmonds' murder.
Tributes paid to caring nurse. Tributes have been paid to an inspirational young Winchester nurse who died after a deer jumped in front of her car. Ivory Lapitan, 24, was killed after her car hit the animal and then crashed into a tree on the A33 near Micheldever on morning of April the 25th. Miss Lapitan from Basingstoke was on her way to work at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, where she was a qualified nurse. Paramedics rushed to the scene on the A33 at 6:30 a.m., but Miss Lapitan was dead at the scene. Since the news broke of the former Bishop's Challoner Catholic School student's death, friends and family have rallied round to raise money to help towards the funeral costs. A GoFundMe page was set up by Lara Gualberto Allen and Risa Pasel Ludos Jose from the Living God Church at St. Gabriel's Church in Popley to support Miss Lapitan's family. Since being set up on April the 29th, more than £4,000 has been donated to the page. In a message to Miss Lapitan, Mrs. Gualberto Allen said, "We are praying for your family in this difficult time. Your dad thinks the world of you. He is heartbroken, as is your mum and brother. The NHS has lost such a caring nurse." Several people took to Facebook to pay tribute. Anna Wisniewski posted, "The kindest person I have ever met, with the biggest heart. You will be truly missed by everyone that has ever crossed your path." Jennifer Gill added, "Ivory Lapitan, you will be deeply missed. You have brought so much happiness and laughter into my life. There was never a dull moment, and my many memories with you will never be forgotten. You truly lived life to the fullest, and you are an inspiration to us all. May your kind heart and gentle soul rest in peace. The 24-year-old graduated from Southampton University with a degree in adult nursing before taking up her post at the RHCH. Mary Edwards, chief executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Winchester Hospital, said, "Ivory was a highly regarded nurse whose loss has been felt hugely by everyone who worked with her. Our thoughts are with her family and friends at this very difficult time."
Help for rough sleepers. Council bosses are working with retailers to relaunch Help for the Homeless. Excuse me. The Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, and the council have joined forces on the newly named Alternative Giving Scheme, formerly known as Spare Change for Real Change. It works by getting the public to donate to a scheme rather than directly to those homeless or sleeping rough in the city, and has been running for 5 years, although similar schemes started in the mid-1990s. Lead member for housing, Councillor Caroline Horrell, agreed the relaunch and the council's involvement, and £5,000 funding has been put aside in the homelessness prevention budget. Costs will be shared between the council and BID. Donations are made via 20 collection boxes in shops and pubs. They're then shared between homelessness charities, the Night Shelter and Trinity Day Centre. In its report, the council said there will be a benefit in the council working as a partner on the scheme. The relaunch will include new signage on the boxes, including the council logo.
And another item about the homeless in Winchester, Rough Sleepers Help Group. More than 70 people slept rough to experience what it is like to be homeless. They took part in the annual Big Sleep Out to raise almost £15,000 for homeless charity Trinity Winchester. People gathered in the Cathedral Close to build their cardboard castles, their makeshift homes for the night on Friday. The Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clear, judged the castles, and Osborne Property Services were crowned winners. Jenny Barstow, events and community fundraiser at Trinity, said the Big Sleep Out was a fantastic event. There was a wonderful atmosphere as everyone enjoyed the evening, took in the wonderful bands and came together to support the charity. The event has helped to raise valuable funds and awareness of the vital work carried out by Trinity Winchester. The charity, based at Durngate, supports more than 800 people a year, many homeless, by providing services and support. Trinity is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year, and there are indeed some very jolly pictures of people in coloured sleeping bags and with tents and guitars and obviously having a very good time.
4.5 thousand pounds stolen from farm store. Sorry. Thousands of pounds were stolen from a farm shop near Winchester. Thieves broke into the Good Life Centre in Hedburn Worthy overnight on May the 4th and stole £4,500. The external alarm box was smashed at 11:11 p.m. and the raiders got in through a fire exit. They used a fire extinguisher to smash an internal door and get to the safe. A takings envelope was later found discarded in the river near Micheldever. The incident has left staff shaken, and a post on the shop's Facebook page said, "We want to let customers and other local businesses know, as these people were almost professional in their approach and knew exactly what they were doing. Staff here are extremely upset and shaken, and ask that if anybody heard or saw anything around 11:30 p.m, please contact us or the police."
Long wait for your favourite summer treat. What could be more English than strawberries and cream in the summer? However, this year, people looking forward to the traditional English fair may have to wait a little longer. That's after a surprise return of winter and temperatures more akin to January than May. And this has affected some of Hampshire's strawberry farms. But while the beginning of the strawberry season may have been frozen out, experts say that means that later in the year there's likely to be a glut of strawberries and prices could drop considerably. Experts say as a result you'll get more straws for your money in a £2 punnet. Vince Weller, harvesting manager from New Forest Fruit Company in East Boulder in the Forest, said, "The frost didn't cause any damage to our strawberries as they are covered in polythene tunnels. However, they're likely to have a big impact on the production profits. We produce a significant tonnage of strawberries, and the cold nights and frosts are slowing ripening down significantly. We're not as able to pick as many as we'd like, and it will mean we'll have more fruit ripening later, which puts us under pressure. If the fruits are ripening slower nationally, there'll be much more ripening later, and this will drive prices down. There's no physical damage, but it will mean a loss of income because prices will be lower." Dan Cully of Bourne Valley Pick Your Own near Whitchurch said his strawberries normally are ready from the end of May to the beginning of June, but this year they'll be ready from mid-late June. "We're at least a fortnight behind. Everything's behind. Strawberries, raspberries are late, and asparagus is just poking through. Blackcurrant bushes are only just coming out. We've had frost that last three nights, and that kills the flower, and they don't produce."
NHS employees' voicemail tirade. A bereaved parent and campaigner received a voicemail calling her a vindictive, unpleasant, and nasty cow from someone claiming to work at a controversial health trust. Dr. Sarah Ryan, the mother of 18-year-old Connor Sparrowhawk, has called for those responsible to be brought to account since her son drowned following an epileptic seizure while under the care of Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust. The woman who left the voicemail message can be heard to say, "Good morning. Hello. Hi. This is a message for Dr. Sarah Ryan. I've been seeing on the media about your son, your poor son that died in the care of Southern Health. I work for Southern Health and I feel awful you lost him. I'm so sorry that you have done. It's tragic. And I hope you find some closure after the report, the issue of the GMCQ report today. But I do think you're being very vindictive. I think you're a vindictive cow, on TV all the time, slating the NHS and Southern Health. With your intelligent background, you know as much as anybody else knows that Southern Health only took over those units in Oxfordshire recently, you know, the recent months before your son died. You know, with your background, it takes a while to make changes anywhere, and I think now you've just become a something inaudible and you want some attention, but you are vindictive and you are unpleasant and you are a nasty cow." Dr. Ryan said in her online blog, "The call is vitriolic, nasty, and beyond inappropriate, but it's simply part of a set of improbable, inappropriate, nasty, and worse responses we've endured since our son died." A Southern Health spokesman said the trust would carry out an internal investigation. He said, "We have been made aware of the phone message through social media, and the content is deeply concerning. The Trust cannot condone such behaviour, and we take matters like this extremely seriously." Shadow Mental Health Minister Luciana Berger called for Katrina Percy, Chief Executive of Southern Health, to be sacked after the Care Quality Commission report found the Trust was still failing to protect patients at risk. An independent investigation found in December that it had failed to investigate hundreds of deaths since 2011. The Health Minister, Alistair Burt, admitted the report made for disturbed reading, as he said the government had not ruled out the possibility of an inquiry. Meanwhile, bosses at Southern have confirmed the appointment of a new interim chairman. Tim Smart has succeeded Mike Petter, who stepped down ahead of the latest report. A Southern spokesman said Mr. Smart would review the capacity and capability of the Trust's current board. Mr. Smart added, "Two of my immediate priorities are to make sure that the quality and safety of our services improve and ensure the board functions more effectively. The Care Quality Commission has identified some serious issues which need to be resolved quickly and effectively. I assure everyone that, as chair, I will always act in the best interests of the population we serve.
Artistic Hunt for History of Street. A new community art project to discover the history connected with the Winchester Street has been launched. The project called We Found It in Chesil has been introduced to help research and discover the rich history connected with the road. The project will engage residents, businesses and groups. French artist Laurence Dube Rushby has been commissioned by Winchester City Council to coordinate the project. From the stories, memories, photographs and images that people share, she will produce designs for display on the site boardings for the controversial Chesil Extra Care Housing Scheme under construction on the former car park. As reported in the Chronicle, the £15 million housing scheme, which will provide 52 flats for over 55s. Mrs. Dube Rushby said, "It is amazing to discover the wealth of historical facts related to the street, as well as personal stories. Chesil Street seems like a whole separate part of Winchester with a real identity attached to it. It is definitely worth a visit and a chat with all the wonderful business owners and residents there." The project has sparked the interest of several local groups and businesses. These include the junior section of Chesil Youth Theatre, based in Chesil Street. Working with their director, Corinne James, and Lawrence, they have been developing a range of characters from the past, all connected with the location. Chairman of Chesil Theatre, Martin Humphrey, said, "Chesil Street is certainly a vibrant community, and Chesil Theatre this year celebrates 50 years of performing in the listed building of St Peter's Church. Our neighbours certainly lend a hand in our activities, recently including props provided by the Black Boy and Richard Steele, fundraising from Chesil Rectory Restaurant, and always great support from residents. We're very proud of our Chesil Youth Theatre and delighted they can contribute to this worthwhile community arts project."
Drivers right-of-way face-off. Two drivers caused school run mayhem by refusing to move for an hour during a pinch point clash in Winchester. The motorists have been branded idiotic after the face-off in St James's Lane. Furious mum Janice Porter said her 8-year-old son was left crying in the rain as her children waited to be picked up from King's School. Police were believed to have been called to settle the dispute as traffic tailed back to a major city road. Miss Porter from Shawford said, "I was waiting there for almost an hour. My kids were in a pouring rain for me, waiting for me." The clash occurred on Tuesday afternoon, May the 10th, as a Vauxhall Astra headed across a single-lane railway bridge when the oncoming Ford Focus had right-of-way. Miss Porter joked that it was tempting to go and confront the pair. "They didn't do a lot. They just stared at each other," she added. Winchester residents expressed their anger at the stubborn drivers after Miss Porter shared her experience on Facebook. Steve George said, "Bunch of useless, idiotic drivers. Says a lot for the standard of driving around this place. So many people that don't have a clue how our roads are meant to work." The Chronicle asked police about reports that officers attended, but the force had not responded at the time of going to press.
Come on, Tim. Tennis ace visits children's hospice. Tennis pundit Tim Henman took time out of his busy schedule to visit Naomi House and Jack's Place. The former British number one, who won 11 titles and played in 4 Wimbledon semi-finals, visited the hospice near Winchester with his wife Lucy. Tim and Lucy were representing the Tim Henman Foundation, a charity that organises programmes to better the lives of disadvantaged young people, focusing on education, health and welfare. The couple were joined by Richard Garrett and Catherine Hamlett, also from the foundation, and spent time touring the state-of-the-art facilities and meeting children and young people that rely on the high standard of care available at the hospice. During the tour, Tim, Lucy and their colleagues tried out the hospice's brand new sensory room and music therapy suite, as well as visiting the charity's hydrotherapy pool, gardens and spiritual places. The group also spent time in the charity's dedicated spaces for post-bereavement care and heard about the support that Naomi House and Jack's Place offers families at the end of a child or a young person's life. Tim Hemman said, "Lucy and I were so impressed with every aspect of our visit to Naomi House and Jack's Place. The quality of dedicated care that can be delivered through the excellent facilities and the amazing staff is outstanding. The whole feel of Naomi House and Jack's Place is one of being an extension to the child or young person's home and family. My foundation is keen to support this charity's wonderful endeavours." Naomi House and Jack's Place Chief Executive Mark Smith said, "It was a real pleasure to welcome Tim, Lucy and their colleagues from the Tim Henman Foundation to Naomi House and Jack's Place. They were exceptionally generous with their time and really engaged with the children, young people and care staff that they met."
Pupils in need left in limbo. Hundreds of children in Hampshire with special education needs have been left in limbo after local authorities failed to meet an important deadline. Councils across the UK have a duty to produce a final transition education healthcare plan for children with special educational needs to ensure a smooth transition when moving from primary to secondary school. The deadline to submit these plans was February the 15th, but a Freedom of Information FOI request found more than 3,800 plans across the United Kingdom have missed this deadline. Hampshire County Council missed the deadline for 325 children. Southampton City Council failed to submit 62 plans in time. According to the FOI, Southampton only managed to submit one education healthcare plan by February. Hampshire County Council have failed to meet the deadline for 82% of their plans. This could leave parents and teachers without enough time to prepare for the child's transition into a new school. Thomas Mitchell, a specialist education solicitor from Simpson Millar, who submitted the FOI request, said, "The February deadline was crucial for parents who need time to prepare their children for the transition. Thousands of children with special educational needs now face a stressful, poorly managed and hugely overwhelming transition from primary to secondary school. The local authorities that have failed to meet the deadline could all face a judicial review." A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "We have completed the transfer process for many of the children affected. For those whose transfer assessment is in progress, parents and carers have been assured that their children will continue to receive the support they need. We're working very hard to complete the remaining transfer assessments. Our focus has been to ensure that the assessments are carried out to a high standard and that the appropriate tailored provision is made for each and every child with special educational needs and or disability. The new process has meant that it has proven difficult to meet the new statutory deadline because of the complexity of the task and the amount of work involved. Southampton City Council was approached by the Chronicle about the figures but could not comment by the time of publication."
Royal Seal for Appeal. Prince Edward joined 360 guests in Winchester Cathedral's Great Nave for a sumptuous four-course dinner in aid of the cathedral appeal. The Prince's patron of the appeal, and earlier in the day, had formally opened the Wessex Learning Centre, newly built to enhance facilities for 25,000 young people who visit every year. Guests were welcomed by the Winchester College Pipe Band, and a fanfare was provided by trumpeters from Peter Simmons College. The guests were treated to a locally sourced menu created specially by local chefs Jack Stein of the Rick Stein Group, Luke Matthews, Shute and Glen Hotel, and Andy McKenzie, Exclusive Chefs Academy. The menu included marinated test trout, marinated fillet of beef, and chocolate and blackcurrant in various guises as a dessert. Afterwards, there's both an auction and a raffle containing some spectacular lots and prizes, including a Cartier watch, a high-level hard hat tour and dining experience in the cathedral, trips to various exclusive sporting events, and intriguingly, a place on a master's course at the University of Winchester. In September 2012, Winchester Cathedral launched a £20.5 million capital fundraising appeal for conservation of the historic fabric and to transform its outreach and presence in the community.
Cress to impress at event. The self-styled World Capital of Watercress honours the green salad crop with its annual festival this Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Alsford will be taken over by the plant as more than 10,000 people are expected in the town. Organisers promise family attractions and mouth-watering treats, ranging from soup and cakes to watercress ice cream, watercress beer, even watercress-flavoured gin. The day starts at 10 a.m. with live music and food and craft stalls selling their wares. At 10:30 a.m, a cavalcade brings Broad Street to a standstill as the traditional horse and cart carrying the watercress king and queen hand out the superfood to festival goers, followed by a procession of Morris dancers, musicians and schoolchildren. In the afternoon, the World Watercress Eating Championships will see contestants attempt to have their name listed in the Guinness Book of Records. Another attraction will be cookery demonstrations by local chefs. The festival is free. There is a charge for parking at the Alsford car parks or at the park and ride at Ropley. The festival signals the start of National Watercress Week.
Thanks very much, everyone. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. A reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870370. Again, thanks to our editors Gordon and Liz, also to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And many thanks to our readers this morning. Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Bye-bye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
And goodbye from me, Maria. And please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible.